Sitting in a hammock on a nice night in June with a pretty girl is easy to forget there's a war on. But the Japanese are a long way from being licked. I suppose you've all seen the pictures of the Saratoga, and you know what a terrible pasting she took from those Jap suicide bombers. We've got to realize the Japs are going to fight more and more desperately as we close in on them. That's why our men need every advantage in material and equipment that we can possibly give them. That means bonds. Let's see that no American is left fighting with his bare hands because we didn't dig down in our pockets for the money to buy guns. It's not a question of how much we think we can spare, but how much they need. Nimitz and Marshall say $14 billion. Let's give it to them. Good night, everybody.
I'm James Lilacs, and this is The Diner, on the air since 1997, on the web since 2005, and now available in handy podcast form. It's Friday, January 27th, 2006. Welcome. Well, they're busy here today. Well, as I said, welcome back to The Diner, folks. I'm James Lilacs, sitting at my accustomed place at the long boomerang pattern Formica counter here at The Diner out on old Highway 23, about 18 and a half minutes from wherever you happen to be right now, enjoying a good, hot, strong cup of diner coffee. That's good squishy. Man, that stuff is depilatory strength. And just contemplating what's been going on for the last week. It's been a quiet week here at The Diner. Actually, it's not a quiet day here at all. Could you all just hold it down for a little bit? I'm trying to talk. Why are you looking at me like that? Oh, all right, go back to it. Right. People think they run the place. Well, I'm happy to report, incidentally, that the diner is now smoke-free. That's right. The cigarette machine by the door broke, and all you have to do is pull the handle, clank, clank, and out comes your favorite brand. Providing, of course, your favorite brands are the archaic favorites, Lucky Strikes. They come in the green pack here at the diner, which just shows you how fresh they are. Camels, of course, that for which you would walk a mile. Marlboros for the ladies. Marlboro was originally a women's cigarette. The filter was there so that your dainty lips need never touch tobacco. And Chesterfields, of course. Man, even when I was a smoker, I couldn't handle a Chesterfield. And how people put back 40 of those a day, I know it. You might as well just cut yourself open and had your lungs paved with roofing tar, because that was going to be the general effect. At the Valley where I worked, back in college, there was a cigarette machine by the door, and it was a wonderful late 60s, early 70s looking machine. It's really a pity, come to think of it, that cigarette machines went the way of the dodo, because I would love to see what the current modern take on them would be. You know that circa year 1990, 2000, 2001, eventually cigarette machines would have looked like IMAX. They would have had some candy-colored clear plastic over the top of them. The one thing the Valley cigarette machine never had was my brand. It had all the popular kid brands, but it never had mine. Barclays. And then Kent 3s. Oh, how I looked down on those poor people who smoked Merritts. What an awful cigarette. No, Barclays for me. And then Carlton's, for heaven's sakes. Never smoked a real good cigarette for any length of time in my life. I'll be really irritated if I suffer ill health consequences later in my life, even though I've quit. You know, it's from Barclays. It's like getting herpes from a blow-up love doll. Well, glad I stopped. And I do love my cigars. Yeah, I know. Less talking, more rocking. Well, as I mentioned last week, all of the spaces here at the counter have been equipped with their own individual small private little jukeboxes, which makes for quite a cacophony when everyone's playing at once. But I'm the only one here at the counter right now, and I don't know why. I mean, I bathe. But let's see what F6 gets us. The label says it's Crapa Palada, 30s Italian jazz in the Cab Calloway style. Well, how bad could that be? Really? Heidi, Heidi Ho. God, the waitress was so creeped out by jiving Mussolini-era Italians, she fainted. Hey, good news, Giovanni. We got the contract to publish the sheet music for Crapa Palada. The bad news, you gotta transcribe the lyrics, eh? God, it just goes on and on and on. It's like these guys are being paid by the note. It's like paying Jack Kerouac by the consonant. Hey, an ending. Didn't see that coming. And now, a word from our sponsor.
You're twice as sure with two great names, Frigidaire and General Motors. For Frigidaire refrigerators are made only by Frigidaire, a division of General Motors. And it is this association of Frigidaire and General Motors, this association of experience, of skill with skill, that makes Frigidaire America's favorite refrigerator. Remember this when you choose your new refrigerator. Remember that millions of Frigidaires in millions of American homes have established Frigidaire's reputation for complete dependability, for lasting satisfaction. Yes, you're twice as sure with two great names, Frigidaire and General Motors. For Frigidaire refrigerators are made only by Frigidaire, a division of General Motors.
Gee, do you think Frigidaire and General Motors have any particular connection?
Ah!
Sorry, everybody. Go back to your meals. It's all fine. I just had to shoot the jukebox for the good of everyone in case it got stuck playing Crapa Padala all night. Oh, great. Another thing is smoking here. It set off the alarm. I'm rapidly losing control of everything here, folks. Let me just shut everything down here, take a deep breath, play some cleansing music to clear our palates, and begin again. That didn't work for squat. Let me try that again. That's better, but one more time. There, that did it. I'm all calm now. Well, you know, often I get letters from people who say, gosh, you do a lot of stuff. You work really hard. You must be really busy. It seems so, doesn't it? I mean, 6 columns a week, 5 bleats, this, that, and the other. I have taken care of the kid from time to time. But the fact of the matter is that I have time to do things which are complete and utter waste of time. For example, last week when I was ill, I was pasted on the sofa with a bad case of urchinitis, and I watched A Clear and Present Danger on television. No, I'm not talking about Nicole Richie's reality show. I'm talking about a Philip Noyce-directed movie with Harrison Ford, who acts primarily with his chin in this one, lowering it to show that he is serious, lowering it even more to show that he's dead serious. There's a scene in the movie, since it takes place in the 90s, in which there's some very dramatic typing going on. When computers are involved in these movies, especially in the 90s, there's just an awful lot of frantic typing. Really stern, furrowed, browed, clackety-clack stuff to tell you that this is high drama. And there's an instance in which Harrison Ford is attempting to get some items out of a computer from a bad guy, while the bad guy himself is logged on. I'm making air quotes here. And so he's scooping up the files and trying to do print, you know, stabbing the print screen. It's the only movie I've ever seen where the entire plot seems to hinge on whether or not the print screen button will work fast enough. You know, here's this button that hasn't been used by anybody for 30 years, as far as I can tell. But print screen, damn it! Clackety clackety clack goes the dot matrix. It just looks ancient, even though it's not that old. In any case, I'm listening to the music, and something strikes me as familiar. It's mostly musical rhubarb. By that I mean, from what I understand, in theater, if people are in a crowd scene and they're supposed to make the sound of agitated, querulous people, you know, basic, confused crowd noises, everyone just says rhubarb, 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 rhubarb. And the cumulative effect of 15, 20 underpaid, well, maybe not, maybe they're equity, people saying rhubarb, rhubarb sounds like a confused, babbling, querulous crowd. And sometimes soundtrack music is just musical rhubarb. It doesn't really say anything or do anything to present you with any themes. It's just there to echo and reflect the action and move it along. This is Class A musical rhubarb. But something caught my ear. Now, hold on one little minute there, I said to myself. I've heard that piano figure before. But where? Where? Damn it, where? I could have gotten up and gone to the IMDb and checked to see who wrote the soundtrack, but no, you just keep watching the movie. And then I heard this. That was the dramatic music for the conclusion to the print screen section. Will the IBM 386 communicate with the printer in time? I can't bear the strain. But again, where had I heard that before? Well, I'd heard it here. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Listen. Same composer, same motif, different movie. Oh, and what about that piano figure? Well, again, same composer, different film. Compare and contrast. And so what, you say? So the guy had his motifs. So what? It's not like a Danny Elfman score, 99% of which consists entirely of oompa, 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 oompa. Heck, even Gustav Mahler had his trademark sounds, his cowbells, his shift from the major to the minor dramatically. But Well, the composer for both of these scores is James Horner. The composer for the first example that I used was Clear and Present Danger. The second score, in which I detected the same sounds and motifs and notes and patterns, was Titanic. The first one is meant to accompany a man who's typing and frowning and attempting to rescue some files before they're deleted, and the second one is about the death of the world's largest passenger liner as it splits in two and takes 1,000 people down to the inky beyond. Somehow I think you ought to be able to tell the difference between the two scores. You ought to be able to listen to them and say, you know, that one I think is about file management, but I think this one is about chilly death in the North Atlantic. I'm pretty sure I've got the two distinct, but yeah. The thing is, I will forgive James Horner anything, because he wrote a piece of music which you've heard, guaranteed. Oh, believe me, you've heard this. I'm convinced that more people on this planet have heard this piece of music than have heard Beethoven's Ninth, the end of it. The reason being was that not only was it in a very popular movie, but it was used over and over and over again in movie trailers. As a matter of fact, there's hardly a trailer that was done in the late 90s, in the early 2000s, that didn't conclude with this music, especially if it was a dramatic and violent one. And this is really a fine piece of work, and I don't have it and can't play it for you. Sorry about that. Sorry. If I did, though, trust me, you'd love it. Anyway, seems to be thinning out here tonight. I'm not exactly sure why. Can't be my random destruction of the jukebox. They've already repaired and replaced the jukebox, incidentally. They must have boxes of the things downstairs in the diner basement, where I've never been exactly. Never been allowed down there. But it's already hooked up and nice and shiny and chrome and new, and, you know, I suppose Crapa Pilata is in there somewhere, but I'll be damned if I'm going to press F6 again. There is one thing I want to play for you before we go tonight. It's not in the jukebox system. I've got it down in the computer. It's a scrap I've been carrying around for a long time, and it has to do, sort of, with something that was banging around the internet this week. It had to do with a columnist who expressed an attitude toward the military that was less than, well, convulsively happy, shall we say. And I'm not going to get into the particulars of him or the piece or any of those sentiments, except just to show you this, to play you this, which ran in the 1940s as a weekly radio show.
Soldiers of the press. Shoulder to shoulder with the men on the fighting fronts of the world go the correspondents of the United Press. You will find them peering down from the bellies of bombers over New Guinea or Kiel, scanning swirling actions in Egypt from the scant cover of foxholes or from baking, bruising tanks. You will find them on the bridges and sky controls of cruisers and carriers off Midway and Wake and Malta, or sharing a lookout's watch aboard a convoy ship heading blindly through the Arctic dark for Murmansk. With the troops they accompany, these correspondents face every peril of war, gunfire, capture, and pestilence, hardship, tension, and tedium. Theirs is a vital wartime task to observe and report to you developments on the battlefronts. Report them clearly, completely, quickly. Among the hundreds of United Press correspondents fulfilling this important mission is Henry T. Gorell. Our story of his recent adventures is the story behind a communique issued by United States Heavy Bombardment Air Force Base somewhere in the Middle East.
1942. The next time somebody harks back to the glory days of newspaper reporting during war, you might point them to that. Objectivity wasn't exactly toppermost, it seems, in the minds of the correspondent. And good for them, because there was an us, and there was a them. And they weren't the them, they were the us, if you know what I mean. Well, it's time for me to leave. After all, I am the last one here at the diner. Everyone seems to have left, including the chef and the waitress. And oddly enough, everyone left sort of in the middle of their meal, it looks like, as though they were scared and just fled. Go figure. Well, I'm going to amuse myself with a tune here from the Jukes Box to, you know, the Jukes Box. What are they putting in the coffee tonight to take us out here? Let me just check what we got here. F6. Whoa, wait a minute. No. No, something's wrong. Every song in the jukebox here on the counter is Crapa Pilata. Every single one of them. Like there's some sort of infection here that's taken over the entire diner jukebox system. Hey. Well, you know, all right, fine. I'm not going to put a nickel in that slot. It's not a song I want to hear again tonight. I did not turn that on. Okay, something is very, very wrong here. I just noticed that the plug is not in the outlet. Okay, I am out of here. Where are my car keys? Something bad is gonna happen.
Bye, sorry, not sticking around for evil.
Where's my car? Oh, right there. God, I hope she starts. Oh. Come on, come on, come on. I'm dealing with a haunted jukebox here, for God's sakes. That was the piece of music I was talking about, the one I said I didn't have, by James Horner. The Rescue of Ripley, actually. Bishop's Countdown, it's called, from Aliens. And it's used over and over and over again in all kinds of credits, and it never loses its punch. It's a nice piece of work. What, you actually thought that I was doing that? The leaving, the going out the door, the walking to the car, the peeling out? Please. This is the diner. It's not the Mercury Theater. Well, whatever it is, it's over. It's time for me to leave and get back in the car and drive down old Highway 23 home, kiss the kid, tuck her in bed. Thanks for dropping by, folks. This has been the Diner Podcast for Friday, January 27th, 2006. And remember, next time we do it, we'll be back.